What are fallen angels? What are demons? Are those just two different names for the same spiritual entities, or are they distinct in power and purpose? We'll discuss these questions in this week's episode of the Faith by Reason podcast. Welcome to the podcast, the website behind it all. As always, it's faithbyreason.net. There you will find the blog and the podcast and a ton of great information, so please check it out. And we are continuing our series called Know Your Enemy, series focused on Satan and the fallen angels. And in the previous three podcasts, we spent some time learning about Satan, who he is, what he was before the fall, what he was after the fall, which is what we talked about in the last podcast. And this podcast, we're going to talk about Satan's minions, his compatriots, his partners in crime, if you will, which we call fallen angels and demons. But before we do, I just want to wrap up the little mini series on Satan by taking a little bit of a deeper dive into something I mentioned in the last podcast, which is Satan's legal authority. In the last podcast, we talked about how Satan is considered the god of death due to the curse that was placed on him in Genesis 3 when he tempted Adam and Eve and they fell, and when he was called the serpent or the Nahash, which means a shining one, which basically is Satan and Lucifer. But part of the curse said that he would hunger for dust. Dust would be his food. And dust is an idiom for the death of man, so he hungers after the death of man. So that is part of the curse. And of course, while hungering for the death of man, he also wants man's worship. And that kind of dichotomy is part of the torment of Satan's curse. But Satan also achieved a victory of sorts when man fell, not just because God's plan was sort of set awry, but also because Satan gained the legal authority that Adam had. Adam was given the authority over earth. God gave that to Adam, and he had that as long as he was connected to God. When he was disconnected from God, when Adam chose Satan's way, which is eating the forbidden fruit over God's way, Satan gained Adam's legal control over the earth. And the Bible makes this clear in several places. When Satan tempted Jesus and offered him all the kingdoms of the world if Jesus would bow down before him, Jesus never disputed that claim. Satan has that claim to the earth. He is called, by Paul, he's called the god of this world. He says the entire world is under the sway of the wicked one. Jesus calls Satan the god of this age. So Satan has legal authority over the earth. However, that legal authority comes with a couple of huge disadvantages. The first disadvantage is that, unlike God, who rules over creation, who has and will rule over creation, Satan is not omnipresent. God is omnipresent. God can be everywhere at once, which facilitates ruling, because if you're everywhere at once and you know what's going on all times, and you can, exert your authority over everything because everything is within your knowledge. Satan does not have that. Even though Satan is very powerful, he is not anywhere near as powerful as God. Satan is limited in his locality. He is not everywhere at once. He is local. He is at one place at one time. So that's a huge disadvantage. However, he mitigates that with the authority and cooperation that he has with the fallen angels and demons, which we will talk about in this podcast and the next. The other big disadvantage he has is that he does not have the same level of authority as Adam did, because when I say that Satan is limited in his locality and that limits his ability to rule, that begs the question: well, what about Adam? Adam was also limited in his locality. He was not omnipresent like God, but the difference is that God gave Adam authority as his image bearer. When the Bible says that Adam and Eve were created in the image of God, of course it does. We talked about this before. It doesn't mean that Adam and Eve looked like God. That God has two arms and two legs and a head of hair like a human being. No, it means that they are God's image bearers. They bear the image of God to creation, so that when all of the created beings, entities, and the creation itself, physical creation, when they encountered Adam, they had to treat Adam the same way they would God. When they saw Adam, they saw God. Adam was God's image bearer, so all of creation obeyed Adam. The animals obeyed him. The plants obeyed him. The bugs obeyed him. Everything obeyed Adam because God gave him that authority. He did not give Satan that authority. Satan is not an image bearer, hasn't been, and never will be. So creation does not obey him. So even though he has that technical legal authority, he does not have the authority to force any living thing on earth to obey him. I mean, essentially, Satan's rule over earth is the same as a teacher in seventh grade who's a teacher over a group of unruly junior high schoolers. Yes, the teacher technically has the authority, but as you probably know, if you've ever encountered junior high schoolers, and you were probably one yourself at one time, you know that junior high students are some of the most unruly and just completely outrageous and tough to deal with human beings on the earth. No one wants to be around seventh graders, seventh and eighth graders. They're terrible. I mean, they're too old to be considered, you know, kind of cute and cuddly like elementary schoolers. So they're too old for that, but they're also too young for them to get the beating that they so richly deserve. You can't get them into a fist fight because, you know, that would be wrong to, you know, to beat up a 13-year-old, even though they would richly deserve it. So they're too young to be, I mean, they're too old to be considered cute, and they're too young to be put in jail. So they have that perfect mix of unruliness that you can't do anything about. And that's what Satan deals with. He has the legal authority over earth, but mankind is unruly. Some of them will obey him, but most people don't. We all want to go our own way. And again, we talked about that in the podcast on the nature of man. We all want to be the kings and queens of our own little kingdom. And that is in total opposition to what Satan wants, which is why Satan will never perfectly rule the earth. He has come close and will come close again. He came close in the third dispensation with Babel, when all of mankind was of one mind and wanted to, and had only one accomplishment in mind, one goal, which was to overthrow God, until God thwarted that. And he'll also have, you know, a pretty high level of authority and success in ruling over man during the end time period that we call the tribulation, where again God will give him, you know, a bit of free reign to finally implement his kingdom. And he'll come close again, but then Armageddon will happen and Christ will come back. But getting way ahead of ourselves on that, I'm dealing with that on the blog. So if you're interested in the end time stuff, then go to the blog and check that out. So the bottom line is, he does not have the omnipresence or the God-given authority to rule perfectly like as he would like. However, he mitigates that by having other entities, other powerful spiritual entities on his side, not necessarily doing his bidding, but at least sharing in his goals. And these entities are called fallen angels and demons. Now, as I just said, despite the popular opinion and mythology, all of the other fallen spiritual entities are not totally ruled by Satan per se. They are not. They don't all bend the knee to him, to use a term from Game of Thrones. They don't all give him complete authority and just say, "Okay, we're your minions. We'll do whatever you want." No, as we'll talk about in the next podcast, they have their own agendas and they have their own level of pride. And they have their own desire to be worshipped and to rule over men and to have authority over men. However, since they are all aligned for the same general goal, the same big picture goal, which is to thwart God's plan and to rule over man, then they have enough in common that they pretty much strive for the same goals. And since Satan is the most powerful of these fallen angelic beings, he tends to have a bit of authority over them, and they tend to follow his lead, but it's not perfect. Satan does not and will not ever have perfect rule. So the remainder of this podcast is going to be dealing with these fallen angels and demons and what they're all about. And since our MO at Faith by Reason, since my method of operation, my way of doing things here, is to do that, you know, deep dive, systematic analysis, we're going to start with just the very basics in this podcast. Where did fallen angels come from? Well, they, just like Satan, they were once good angels, and they fell because they followed Satan's lead to some degree. Now, there are two categories. Some of them follow Satan's lead in his first rebellion, before the, basically in Genesis chapter 1 verse 1, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Well, that was when he created angels as well. And then in verse 2, it says, and the earth became formless, desolate, and chaotic. And I've talked about this ad nauseum, that this, I believe, was due to the angelic rebellion that Satan initiated, and the world was rendered chaotic and desolate because it was not created that way. The Bible is very clear that it was not created that way, so something had to happen in order to make it formless, desolate, and chaotic. And again, I've talked about this quite a bit. Listen to the podcast on the age of the earth and just the previous podcast on Satan. And I go into more detail there about what happened in those earlier ages. If Revelation chapter 12, which is a big picture overview of all of human, of world history, of the history of creation, if my view of that's correct, and I believe it is obviously because I said it, then it talks about how the Satan, the serpent, the great dragon, threw a third of the stars, which are idioms for angels, to earth. And most Bible scholars, and I agree with their take, is that it means that a third of angels fell with Satan. So we don't know how many a third. We don't know how many angels there are, but angels are again equated to the stars in the sky, and there are billions, if not trillions, of stars. So a third of them who were flung to earth along with Satan, that would be a significant number of fallen angels. And that would be where a lot of them came from. And I think there was another reason that another 70 or so of them fell. And we'll talk about them maybe in this podcast. If I don't run out of time, if not, then I'll talk about them in the next podcast. How there was a second fall of angels that the Bible talks about in Psalms chapter, oh my God, I think it's 82 or 83. I'll put it in the show notes if it turns out to be relevant in this podcast. Anyway, so that's where fallen angels came from. So the question is, what are fallen angels, and are they the same as demons? Many people think they are. Many people think that fallen angels and demons are the same thing, that a demon is just an evil angel, excuse my grammar. But I don't think that's the case. I think they are distinct. I think the Bible makes their character and their existence and who and what they are very, very distinct. And in order to understand that, let's just look at what fallen angels are first, and we'll look at what demons are and what their characteristics are, and we'll see. I think that, again, there is a distinction that means that there must be two different classes or species, if you will, of these evil spiritual beings. Fallen angels are, for the most part, they have the same essential power, ability, and authority as the good angels. They're extremely powerful, both fallen angels and the good angels. And before we go any further, let's just break down the word angel. Angel is the English translation of the Greek term angelos, which simply means messenger. Now, the problem with that is it's way too broad a term. While yes, there are certain angels whose role is just to be messengers, and there you can see them throughout the Bible, the problem is that's a lower form of angel. The messenger is a fairly low rank. The angels, there's a hierarchy. There's an angelic hierarchy. There are angels who are much very powerful, less powerful, and all the way down the line. Now, I don't know how many rungs there are on the ladder of angelic hierarchy, but I know there are at least a few that are mentioned in the Bible. For example, at the top are the angelic beings called the cherubim, cherubs. And again, they're not the little winged babies you see in medieval art. That's, I have no idea where it even came from. I know where it came from. It's just a pagan demonic rendering of false Greek gods like the Dionysus and Cupid and all that. And that's it, completely paganism. And when paganism infiltrated the church through Catholicism, all of these paganistic renderings of spiritual beings, again, there was the melding of paganism and Christianity, which we call Catholicism, and so a lot of those images just transferred over, and these pagan deities, these winged babies, they just decided to call them cherubs. And if you read the Bible, you know that that's completely false. That the cherubim are described in the Bible completely different than little chubby winged babies. Cherubim are extraordinarily powerful. They are the most powerful class of angels, and Lucifer used to be a cherub. Satan used to be a cherub when he was called Lucifer. You see them again in Revelation chapter 4 and 5. There are four of them. Obviously, there were five, Satan being one of them, and the other four are there, and they are the top-ranked angels. Underneath them are angels called the seraphim, or seraph, and if you look up what the term seraph means, you translate it as seraph is a serpentine, reptilian, which may mean, and this is just my opinion, may mean that they had some association with Lucifer before the fall. They may have been his chief angels, because Satan, Lucifer, is usually spoken of in reptilian terms. He seemed to be the cherub that was over that part of creation. There are other cherub. If you look in cherubs, if you look in Revelation 4 and 5, there's a cherub that look like men. It has the face of a man who's obviously associated with mankind. You have one that looks like a cattle, which puts him over herbivores. One like a lion that puts him over carnivores. And one that looks like an eagle put them over, which associates them with avian bird-like creatures. And of course, the one species that is missing from that would be cold-blooded, well, scaly animals like reptiles and fish. And that's what Satan is. So I think Satan was that fifth cherub who represented that that classification, or was associated with that classification. And the seraphim, which are snake-like, were possibly associated with Lucifer before he fell. Not all of the seraphim fell. I mean, I'm sure some of them fell with Lucifer when he became Satan, but some of them didn't, because you see in the book of Isaiah that there are seraphim around the throne room of God. So you have cherubs and you have seraphim, small numbers of those, only four cherubs, a small number of seraphim. And then you have a larger group, which I call the Divine Council. Actually, I took that term from Dr. Michael Heiser, who did a book that I recommend we read called The Unseen Realm. I've recommended it in the past when we talk about the supernatural worldview. And he calls them the Divine Council. It's about 70 angels that God has made his council, that he discusses things with. Not because God needs advice, but because God enjoys sharing his authority, which is, you know, pretty awesome. And he loves to do that. And then below them, you have, you know, other ranks of angels, including the messenger class. So what's the purpose of me saying all this? The reason I brought all this up is because when fallen angels, when the good angels fell, the ones that are, you know, currently, you know, on Satan's side, they shared the same hierarchy and the same powers as the good angels. So the fallen angels are very, very powerful, some probably more powerful than others. How powerful? Well, these angels are extraordinarily more powerful than men. If you look at, I think it's in either First or Second Kings, I'll put it in the show notes, there is a passage where a single angel, one angel, killed 200,000 Syrian troops because they were threatening God's people. God sent a single angel down, one angel, one evening, killed 200,000 Syrian troops. You don't mess with angels. They're way more powerful than men. Angels also have the ability to manifest themselves to look like men. Paul said, you know, be careful when you entertain strangers, because you may be entertaining an angel unawares. So angels have the ability to transform to look just like regular men, so much so that we would not know that they were, you know, any different than any other human being we met. Now, when angels manifest themselves fully they can appear before men in their full glory. And when that happens, they are so far beyond our capability to understand them, that whenever you see in the Bible an angel manifest himself before man in their full glory, we can't contain it. Daniel, in Daniel chapter 9 and 10, which we'll talk about either probably in the next podcast or maybe at the end of this one, in Daniel 9 and 10, an angel came down to answer Daniel's prayer, and the glory of the angel was so great that Daniel literally went into a coma. He said he fell down as if dead. He was in a coma, and the angel had to bring him out of the coma. So these are just spectacularly powerful beings. Another thing, and fallen angels have that same level of power. Now, granted, God can limit that power as he chooses, which I believe he does quite a bit more after the death and resurrection of Christ. And we've talked about that before, and I'll talk about it a bit more in the next podcast. But generally speaking, these angels are extraordinarily powerful, way more powerful than men, way more glorious than men. Even in their fallen state, they share those traits. Another thing about the fallen angels is that they are always mentioned in some position of rulership. They have authority, and they have majestic authority. Paul talks about the different classes of fallen angels. You know, he calls them powers, principalities, rulers of darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. That's in Ephesians chapter 6. And, you know, these are different classifications of fallen angels, from most powerful to less. Principalities being the most powerful, and then spiritual wickedness in high places being the lowest level of power, but they're still extremely powerful. So that's how fallen angels are presented. So let's look at how demons are presented and see if there's a dichotomy there. And there is. Demons are always presented in a lower rank of power than fallen angels. They are always lower in majesty. In fact, when you read how demons behave, and you see it a lot in the New Testament, especially during the ministry of Jesus, these do not seem to, they are not terribly majestic. They're not authoritative. They seem petty, cruel, almost childish. In fact, I once talked to a minister who, I guess you could call him, for lack of a better term, an exorcist. He kind of specialized in demonology, and he was known to be able to cast demons, these demonic spirits, out of people. That was, you know, a big part of his ministry, was he used the authority of God to cast demons out. So he did this a lot, and he came to know what these demons were like. And we were talking, and he told me that, you know, many of these demons, when you're casting them out, they act like spoiled children. They act very, very bratty. They use, you know, really foul language, and they curse. They, you know, insult him. They are, you know, they just act like, you know, just, they act really bratty. They act like spoiled children, and they, you know, they pout. They throw tantrums. These are not majestic beings. And but one of the, and you know, and again, when Jesus dealt with him, they were fearful, they were craven, cowardly. Their behavior was very, very different than the angelic beings, who seemed to have a level of dignity. Even the evil ones had a dignity that they commanded and expected. But the most pertinent, the most distinctive thing about demons versus fallen angels, the one thing that demons always do, no matter where you encounter them, in the New or the Old Testament, demons, their claim, not their claim to fame, but their basic method of operation, the one thing they always did, they seek embodiment. Demons always want to embody something, preferably a human being, but they can also embody animals. When Jesus met with the one demoniac who had, you know, 2,000 demons possessing him, and yeah, and more than one demon can possess you. Well, not you, I don't believe demons can possess Christians because we have the Spirit of God in us, but they can possess human beings, multiple ones can. And Jesus cast all of them into a herd of pigs. So they can go into animals, but the point is that they always desire embodiment. They always need to be embodied, and they seek it. In fact, when Jesus talked about what a demon who's cast out acts like, and by the way, never in the Bible do you see a fallen angel being cast out of anyone, only demons. Why? Because fallen angels do not need to seek embodiment. They can manifest physically. Demons apparently cannot. They need to be inside of some type of physical form, and they desire it. And Jesus said that when a spirit is cast out, when a demon is cast out, it goes through, you know, harsh, dry places, seeking a new house and a new embodiment to go into. And when it finds a new one, it goes in with more demons, just like its own, just like itself, and completely possess the person. So demons seek embodiment. That means that that main difference is demons don't have or cannot manifest physically. And again, multiple demons can possess a person. I think in many cases where you have multiple personality disorders, or they call it dissociative identity disorder, and schizophrenia. Now, many times, sure, it is the person themselves, and they experience some type of psychotic break. Their mentality was fractured, either due to chemical imbalances or trauma or genetics. But in many of these cases, I also believe that they are demon possessed. And each demon has a personality. And when each demon is manifesting itself separately, that person looks like they have multiple personalities. Not every person who has multiple personality or dissociative identity disorder is necessarily possessed by a demon, but I believe that many are, especially if this person had dabbled in the occult and, you know, played games with the demonic stuff, like the Ouija boards, like these seances, all these stuff that we think is harmless but are actually entrees into demons, and we'll talk about them more in the next podcast. You don't play around with that stuff. It's serious. And if you invite a demon in, they will come into you and they will possess you. So what does all this mean? What are demons then? Well, we know that God only created two categories of sentient intelligent beings: the angelic beings, angels, and men. So are demons one of those? Well, but they're not angels. We just talked about that. They're distinct from angels. But are they men somehow? There are actually many people who strongly believe that demons are the spirits of dead human beings. That when people die under certain circumstances, their spirits, you know, because our spirits are eternal, our physical bodies will deteriorate. But our, we talked about this very early in the podcast series, that we are all eternal, that our spirits have no mass, which means our spirits are not subject to time, which means they're eternal. And so many people believe that when we die under certain circumstances, our spirits are just kind of wander the earth, maybe perhaps looking for something. And that's where we get the legends of ghosts and poltergeist, which is basically the German word for ghost. And these mediums who claim they can commune with the dead, it's believed that they're communing with these wandering dead spirits of human beings. And, you know, they haunt houses and graveyards and so forth and so on. And that's all that mythology I'm not going to get into in depth. But the point is that they believe that, that these demonic entities are just the spirits of dead men. Is that true? Not biblically, no, because the Bible makes it very clear that once a human being dies, their spirit immediately goes to one or two places. It does not wander the earth. It goes to, well, before the death and resurrection of Christ, it went to one of two compartments of Hades, or Sheol, the grave. It either went, if you were good, if you were trusting in God, you went to a place called paradise or Abraham's bosom. We read about this when Jesus gives the parable. Oh, actually, it's not a parable because it names people. I think it's an actual story of the rich man and Lazarus, where, you know, Lazarus was a poor person who, I guess, was a good person. And when he died, he went to Abraham's bosom. The rich man, who was evil, when he died, he went to torment in Hades. So Hades had two compartments: paradise, Abraham's bosom, and a place of torment. So when the person died, they immediately went there. Now, after Jesus' death and resurrection, he emptied paradise and took, you know, the believers to heaven. And now, as Paul would say, if you're a Christian, if you're a believer, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. So if you're a Christian and you die tomorrow, you immediately go to heaven. On the other hand, if you are an unbeliever, then you go to Hades, to torment, where you await the great white throne judgment, which happens at the end of Revelation. So there is no allowance for spirits of men to just roam the earth. That's not allowed for it in the Bible. You go to one of two places, Hades or to heaven, and there's no in between. So the demons are not fallen men. So if they're not angels and they're not men, what can they be? Because those are only two things God created. Well, they could be something that was a corruption of what God created, and I think you may know where I'm going with this. There was a group of sentient beings who were not directly created by God, were not ordained by God, and are a corruption of God's two created entities, man and angel. And I am talking, of course, about the Nephilim. The Nephilim, I talked about them extensively in the series on the supernatural worldview, and the flood narrative in Genesis chapter 6. There is a podcast that talks about, you know, Genesis 6, the sons of God, the Benaiha Elohim, where they, the sons of Seth, as certain Christian teachers teach, which is completely false, completely refutable. They were not men. The sons of God, Benaiha Elohim, were angels. These angels came and had intercourse with women, and they produced these hybrid beings called Nephilim. Again, if you want to take a deep dive into that, go back to the podcast and the blog, and you can read about them there. Just go to the series on a supernatural worldview, look at that category, and you know, you'll be able to see all of that. So these Nephilim, these hybrids, they were evil, petty, cruel, just completely violent, just horrible entities. And when they died, they had a spirit. And when they died, their spirit was separated from their body. The flood wiped out that first wave of Nephilim. There was another wave that the Bible makes it pretty clear. There were Nephilim on the earth after that. And many of them occupied the promised land, which is why God ordered that certain tribes in the promised land be wiped out, man, woman, and child. And the reason for them, we talked about this in the supernatural worldview, is because these were tribes of Nephilim. They were not men. So God was not advocating genocide between human men, women, and children. He was advocating the genocide of the Nephilim, which, again, were not human. So God was not being inhumane because they were not humane. They were these evil creatures who cannot exist alongside man. Anyway, when these creatures died, their soul was separated from their body, but their souls are not sent to Hades or obviously not to heaven. Their spirits are locked on earth. They are earthbound until the final judgment when they will be judged as well. So what does that mean? Well, that means, you have many thousands, possibly millions. If you just look at the flood narrative alone, there were possibly millions, if not a couple billion, of Nephilim on the earth at that time that all died. So you have millions or billions of these entities that are spirit, that are not good, that are quite evil, that are seeking habitation. They are seeking embodiment. And I believe strongly that that's what demons are, because the Nephilim are of a lower rank than angels. They are not fully angelic. They, again, are mean, petty, and cruel, as the Bible describes the Nephilim, and they do not have a body. Their bodies were destroyed. They were killed in the flood or after the flood. So they seek embodiment. So demons, in my strong opinion, and I believe it's biblically backed, are the spirits of fallen Nephilim. They are eternal evil spirits of a much lower rank than fallen angels, but they are there to possess human beings and to influence them. And if you allow them in, they will gladly come in and occupy you. When I say you, I mean, I'm speaking in general, because I do not believe that the Nephilim or these demons can possess a Christian, because the Spirit of God dwells in a Christian, and he will quickly evict any fallen being that tries to possess someone who has the Spirit of God in them. That's just not going to happen. All right, so I am already at the half hour mark, so I'm going to have to wrap this up. So we went over what angels and fallen angels and demons are. In the next podcast, we're going to go take another even deeper dive into what they actually do, what their authority is, what their method of operation is, what their relationship to Satan is, what their goals are. So in the next podcast, we're going to get into, we talked about who they are. Now we're going to get into what they want, what they do, and how we deal with them. All right. So thank you for listening. I appreciate it. Please feel free to leave comments on here on faithbyreason.net, or on Facebook or Twitter or iTunes or any other place that you listen to this podcast. I'd love to hear them. Follow me on social media, and I will talk to you next week when we do a deeper dive into the spooky world of fallen angels and demons.